Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined today by a couple members of Zaffa Collective. Hello, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no problem. So would you mind telling us your names?
I'm Hannah Christensen. I play the violin with Zaffa and am one of the two co-founders.
Cool.
I'm Audrey Snyder. I play cello with the group, and I am at times the social media elf.
Cool.
Zaffa Collective. Nice.
I'm usually the social media elf.
I also have experience being the social media elf. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm short on cash, I peddle my wit out.
Nice.
Yeah. No, but it was cool because, like, the moment you guys walked into our apartment, we knew what instruments you played.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kind of gave it away.
Yeah, we're graced by two string instruments this afternoon, which is always fun.
And it's always interesting too when people play double duty as performers and administrators, because you don't want to, like, you. Everybody, we've talked about this with us, where we were, like, trying to figure out what our titles would be. Mm-hmm. And so, like, everybody plays that game. So it's always fun to, like, hear where people have, like, delineated themselves to in an organization.
Yeah. No, and it's fun, because, like, within figuring out our titles, we also, like, had to figure out, like, what our specific duties were. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, I'm the point of contact, because emails stress him out.
Right.
So, yeah. And
delegating is important.
And I love emails, so. But, no, I really like my title within Scoppy. I'm the womanaging director.
I like that. Love that. I saw that in our first email and I was like, excuse me. Yeah. This is great.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I support it.
We were all very excited when that, I think it was your idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, oh my God, this is perfect.
Well, because you wanted something like flashy, but also like,
but also I was the managing director,
right?
And then you were like, how about the womanaging
like
director?
There should be some personality there. And there
right,
this managing director sounds like a bummer.
That sounds a little dry.
Yeah. Womanaging director,
that's
though.
Full
much
of
better.
Yeah
full of whimsy.
Exactly
Cool. Well, tell us about Zaffa Collective.
So we started about a year ago. And by we, I mean my co-founder / bass player and I, like, sat in a coffee shop for 5 hours and talked about, like, what if it would be cool if we, you know, had this group and we're doing this thing. And then over the summer started doing the heavy lifting on the admin side and putting people together. Audrey kind of fell into our lap.
Yeah, I did.
She Facebook stalked us and
only, like, slightly.
Only slightly. She knew our pianist and horn player and he was like, you have to talk to Audrey. And we loved her and we kept her. So
they adopted me.
We did.
Into their group.
So we started playing shows in November of 2016.
Cool. And I mean, that's totally the move. And you know when someone reaches out to you that, like, that's the kind of person you want to work with.
Oh, yeah.
When I think I, like, went on the Facebook group and I was like, you guys ever need, like, a cellist?
Yeah.
We happened to be looking for a cellist for our first concert at that moment. So we were like, if she's not really weird, we're taking her.
If she's not really weird.
Kind of weird is okay.
As long as she's not, like, a total psycho, like, it'll be okay. Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Like, the moment that you're looking for something really specific, it falls into your lap. That happened with an apartment for me once.
Ooh.
Where I was unhappy with my living situation and I was looking at studio apartments because I was like, clearly it's my fault. And then this is when I was in college, some of my classmates reached out to me and they were like, hey, we're looking for a third person to live with us. Do you want to live with us? And I was like, I'm literally looking at apartments right now. And it was like, great. And it was an awesome.
Aww.
So yeah, isn't the universe funny? You got
the
Audrey.
Stars align.
You got Audrey, I got an apartment.
Exactly.
Well, I love contemporary and new music collectives because I love getting to see what they do with programming and kind of like performance like ideas. So have you guys, I read your mission statement, doing the base level of like research before the interview, where I literally just read your mission statement. But but I like that.
So buckle your seatbelts.
I'm ready.
Yeah. Here we go. No. But I like that, you know, you guys have been only at it for a year, but I think that it's, from what I gathered, is that there is some consideration to that. Is that something that you guys, do you guys have like a vision for, sorry, my cat just distracted me. Yeah. We're pretty openly like, we have animals at every interview. Even like when we don't have interviews here, there's usually a dog or something.
Right.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah. So do you guys have like a vision for kind of your programming and your performance aesthetics, if that makes sense? Or
we're not really steering for a specific aesthetic. Right. We like to do programs with kind of something for everybody on it. Yeah. So like for tonight, we have, I think, two pieces that will make people cry.
Yes.
But in slightly different
people
ways.
People will feel things.
Yeah. Should not tissues. Yeah. But then we have some, like, really tight rhythmic stuff, and Josh is going to surprise everybody with a marimba solo nobody's ever heard.
Right.
Cool.
So we try to get some variety in our programs and not stick to, like, you know, we're only going to do spectralism for a year or something
right.
like that. What we're trying to seek out when we look for composers to work with and commission from is composers who aren't straight white men.
Yeah, that's kind of
what we're going for.
Yeah, no, that's one of those questions where it's like, how do you word this question? But I love that you could, right away I could tell that there, like, representation was a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which it is, especially. I think a lot of conversations that classical musicians are having right now, people that are trained classically, is like, there is just too many old white dead men in this game.
Yeah.
Especially, we had that conversation with opera singers, because, like, mm-hmm. every opera composer ever was either a white straight man or, like, stole the music of some woman that they were, like, obsessed with.
It's like, this sounds dope.
I'll just put my name on that.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that, like, organizations that are pulling from the canon of, the vast canon of dead white men, it's like... I think it's easy to do that because it is so readily available, but I'm glad that you guys are, like, taking the challenge of, like, finding pieces that fall outside of that group, because I think it's important that people are performing it.
It is a challenge, and I hesitate to say this, but at the same time, I feel like all of the pieces that we've had have been really great. We also, like, I think something, you know, it's not like our parameters are just like, oh, just like find a piece by some lady,
right.
you know, yeah, like we want to, we know that there's great music, like there is as much great music out there by, you know, women and people of color that as much great music in that category as there is, you know, written by lots of white men. It's just not getting out there as much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then on top of that, once you've made a program that you're really happy with, working to make it accessible to an audience that's coming to you is also a challenge too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if that's something that you guys have found yet personally, but I know that it can be really challenging, especially, and this is something that I keep hearkening back to, when you're working in Chicago, most of the people that are here are educated. I don't mean that. What I mean is most of the people that attend concerts regularly, most of the people that, at least for coming at it from our perspective of, like, classical singers, like, I've done, one of my things is I was running Opera on Tap for 3 years, Opera on Tap Chicago, I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is extremely, the audience is mostly classical singers, and so, you know, you want to do new things and kind of try to push envelopes, but then, you know, catering to... You have to ride a balance between making it to where people can understand what's actually going on.
You do have to cater to people more than I think some classical musicians are willing to admit.
Yeah.
Willing to come to terms with.
Right.
Yeah.
No, especially, I mean, speaking for, you know, in terms of Opera on Tap, you do have to cater to the people who are in the bar who are like opera singers. Oh,
yeah.
Are you going to sing La Donna e Mobile?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just like, no, I'd much rather just try and put a bunch of, like, song cycles together that isn't that, but... Yeah. Like, yeah, most Mozart can, like, go burn in a fire at this point.
Whoa.
Oh. Or, like, at least, I would say, like, half of certain things.
Let's,
like,
not get carried away.
Like, if we just got rid of Don Ottavio as a concept...
Oh, well, yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
So, I'm fine with. Anyway, but I'm wondering, so Zaffa Collective, I'm wondering the origins of the name.
Oh my God, it's so good. Like, yeah? Hannah has to tell you, because it's okay. So, like, when she, I asked her about it, and she told me about it, and I can never remember what it is, but I remember really that the explanation is, like, perfect. So, like, I'm sorry, I'll just let you tell it.
So Zaffa is a Caribbean Spanish word. I'm half Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a word that pops up in Juno Diaz a lot. Oscar Rao has a Zaffa and Fuku are, like, a main theme.
I love that.
And so Zaffa is, like, something that you would, that an older generation would say to ward off a curse. And that now you would kind of say it more for good luck. And the verb that it comes from means to free yourself, to free oneself. And so when we were trying to think of a name, we really liked the verb that it came from, of like kind of freeing yourself from the constraints of the canon and the constraints of being in the rut of like taking orchestra auditions and like only playing in that setting and things like that. But we also liked the other meanings. And I recently was informed by a friend from Mexico City that, and I'm paraphrasing, I might have gotten this like slightly wrong, but what he was telling me is that Zaffa is something you would say if you were like out at a bar with your friends and it's your turn to go get the next round, which we also enjoy.
Yeah. That's so cool.
It's like
so
every meaning is every right.
Meaning. And they all work. So we loved it. We slapped it on there. And
that's
it.
Awesome. Well, and I love the idea of that you guys are trying to free yourselves mm-hmm. from the canon, because it's like you were saying, there is a certain aspect when you are programming and you are trying to reach out to audiences that otherwise, you know, audiences outside of your bubble,
mm-hmm.
like the idea of freeing yourself from kind of the guilt for not catering more, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
think
know.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, like,
well, even because the where I was going to go with it was, I thought it was interesting when you were talking about, I don't know if I'm now paraphrasing your words, so here we are. But like, the idea of the like the path, like the prescribed path, is something that I know I think about a lot. Especially, I know a lot of singers. I think a lot of people that study music too, because we get degrees and we get a first degree, and some of us get a second degree, and then it's like, well, what am I supposed to do next?
Right.
And I think that like being able to go, I'm gonna make something, is a really cool move. And that's kind of what I was thinking about.
Yeah. I don't know why I brought guilt into it.
No, well, I genuinely think there is a level of guilt in, like, not doing that. I don't know.
In
and
not
so here's
in not pursuing the prescribed path.
Well, like, and definitely, and not just guilt, but, like, fear of
Just
because you have these, especially in, like, traditional, like, classical academic kind of music, you have these pre-existing, these institutions that have, for your education and for your professional life, that have been there for so long, and you're like, how do I, if I'm not part of one of these many institutions, then how do I even navigate a career in music?
Yeah.
And it just can be really scary.
A conversation that I have with relatives fairly often is, you know, oh, Maureen, you're an opera singer, so does that mean that you're going around and, you know, singing in all these operas all the time?
Right.
And when I say, no, I don't do that, I delve, like, in chamber music and some experimental projects and this and that and the other thing, and they're like, oh, well, you know, sounds to me like you've quit music.
What?
You know, you should probably just get an office job. And I'm like,
oh, no,
no, I
like,
don't
whoa,
think you understand.
Like,
no,
I don't think you quite understand that there's space between the career musician, you know, the establishment career mm-hmm. musician, and the office job.
Yeah.
You know, and there's
there is a
room.
Definitely like a middle ground where you can still be a successful musician.
Absolutely. No, and it's more fun to find that wiggle room, I think.
I think it's way more, especially when, I mean, that's when you find like so many people like freelancing and doing so many different things. And I don't know, I would probably be more comfortable if I had one thing that paid me.
Right.
But, you know, I can't imagine my life like not doing a million different things. Like, mm-hmm. I think it keeps it way interesting, but
Yeah.
I work at a string shop, like, as sort of a day job, and people ask me what my instrument is, and, because we're all musicians who work there, and they always say, like, oh, what orchestra do you play in? They, like, automatically, the assumption is that I play in an orchestra regularly, which isn't a bad thing, it's just funny, like, it's just a funny thing that happens mm-hmm. all the time.
And then the other side of that, I'm sure that, I don't know how true this is, but I'd imagine that positions in orchestras are dwindling and dwindling. The same way that like it's harder and harder
to like get a to like land a chorus position with the lyric or something like that.
People are getting older, like less people are retiring earlier.
You guys talked about kind of the strain of the orchestra audition. So, and that's something we don't know anything about. Like, what goes into the orchestra audition?
Stress.
There's an article, and now I can't remember the woman's name who wrote it, but it was pretty big a couple of years ago, and it was about a percussionist auditioning for the Boston Symphony, which is, you know, that's a six-figure job. You go there, and you're set for life. And this article was just how this man like practiced 10 hours a day and stopped talking to his wife and like had this horrible and then like didn't advance, so was any of it worth it? And it was very depressing, and I think it's a little bit hyperbolic, but not too much.
I feel like there's also a way to like prepare for auditions in Excel without like cutting off of all of your social contact and like ruining your marriage. That's not a great example.
That sounds like more his problem.
But that, I mean, the article was a little sensationalist, but went around and a lot of people identified with at least parts of it pretty strongly.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Like I've done one professional orchestra audition, and it, you know, just so I've never made it like a major, like a high priority for myself to really go out and do lots of orchestra auditions. It's the kind of thing I do when I feel like I can, I'm like, oh, I have the time and this is, you know, doable right now. And I did one in San Diego like a couple years ago, and it was like over 100 people auditioning, maybe 200, I can't remember, but it was over 100 people auditioning for one spot. And, you know, I think two or three rounds, I guess, of auditions, and like some really good players that I knew like didn't make it past the first round. Like, it's just, it can be really demoralizing if you're I imagine if you're doing it all the time and you're experiencing that so much. But I don't know where I was going with this, but that's like my only experience with it was, but it's what I've heard. I think what I've heard from people is that it's like an average, you do an average of like 30 auditions before you get a job. Supposedly. But anyway.
And they're expensive.
They are expensive.
Travel and the rounds will be spread over several days, so you have to like get a hotel room.
Do you guys have application fees? Is that a thing?
No, not you for usually orchestras. Have to send a deposit check.
Okay.
So you'll send like a $50 check, and then if you cancel your audition after a certain date, then you pay them.
Got it.
They give your check back, so you have something to wipe your tears with. It's so papery.
Checks are not good tear wiping.
No, material. Only get like ink all over.
Some paper cuts. The worst.
Are blind auditions still a thing in orchestra? Are all orchestra auditions blind?
I think usually my impression is that definitely like the first round is, and then sometimes subsequent rounds are, they take the curtain down, which I think is a mistake. I think they should just keep the whole thing blind forever. Yeah. Not forever. I mean, once you get the job, like, then it's not blind.
Yeah.
Then we will never see you.
Then you can be unmasked. I think they should just leave the curtain up the whole time. But,
I think so, too. Well, because there's a lot going on. And, you know, because I can't speak to the experience of an orchestral player, I'm going to speak to my experience as a classical singer. There's a lot of talk lately within the casting process of like body politics.
Yeah.
And especially when directors have something in mind for like what they're looking for in terms of physical appearance.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, obviously physical appearance does play into, you know, into decisions of like, of casting, no matter what. I would imagine that it would impact. I think it's probably more gendered with the blind auditions for orchestras than like appearance.
I think I've gotten the suggestion before to like not wear heels, just because like even when they like leave the curtain up, you can hear the heels, and the assumption at least is that it's not a guy walking in heels.
Some orchestras will put a carpet out, so it doesn't matter what shoes you're wearing. And I know a lot of women who just take their shoes off for the audition to not deal with it. That makes a lot of
sense. Yeah. That's so interesting.
That's crazy.
I also really appreciate you guys coming on and, like, giving us, like, an orchestral primer. 'Cause I think that, I think what we both did is I'm really enjoying that we've been, over the last week or and a half or so, we've been talking to more instrumentalists. Because I think there's more in common than not. But what's interesting, too, about is that the people we're talking to are people that are creating their own stuff. And so, obviously, I mean, like, if we went into a conversation about what it's like to audition for YAPS, for young artist programs for opera singers, I've probably auditioned for, like, two. You know, like, most of the work I've done post-grad is my own stuff, or, like, friends' stuff, or, like, things that I've wanted to do. And and I think you've done a few more than I have, but, like, it's interesting. I think it's interesting to hear that there are experiences like mine and like yours outside of, like, in other fields, you know, which I think is really cool.
So I want to talk a little bit about your performances, plural, because you have one tonight.
Yes, we do.
Which, like, you know, right now it is 3:10 on Friday, April 7th. And when is curtain?
7:30.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, and if you're in your car right now after work or something, or like on the train or something like that, and you're listening to this podcast episode and you've got nothing to do tonight, you should definitely go.
Yeah.
Where?
Sorry. Oh, no. Sorry, I got excited and blurted it out.
No, you're fine.
It's Heaven Gallery.
Okay, cool.
It's on Milwaukee, right off the Damon Blue Line.
Yes.
I work right around there.
Okay.
There's a new coffee place called Fairgrounds.
Okay, yeah, it's really close to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really awesome. Cool. So what is the program called tonight?
So tonight is part of our salon series, which was what we started with in November. And the idea behind that was, we wanted it to be a concert, but also kind of a hang and not formal in any way. So
we wanted it to be like a
stage,
pretty approachable kind of experience.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So we'll play a piece, take a nice long break, chat with everybody, have some snacks, have some drinks, play another piece, kind of that type of thing. So there's a lot of interaction between the audience and the performers, which is really important to us. And then we can kind of flow and weave between the different styles of pieces that we're programming without kind of giving people whiplash going
right
back and forth.
Yeah, and well, it's helpful too. We were talking with Third Coast Baroque. I don't know if we were talking with them about their project, which they're doing in Pilsen, and they're doing it at the Benito Juarez. And so they're doing a lot of Baroque music, but they're doing a lot of Baroque music with like Spanish and I think Argentinian influence. And they're doing a lot of it similarly. Obviously, it's not like in a is this a bar or is this like a...
No, this isn't an art gallery.
Awesome. Cool. But it's like six... It's like pretty... Anyway, so my point is that it's this in a... It's like in a school, so it's not as like filtery as I think... there's a better word for this. There's a better word for all of this. But my point is that I think it's really important to have that discussion period because it becomes really educational at that point. Mm-hmm. And it also becomes, like, it really helps with the accessibility aspect of it. And so I think it's really cool that that's a part
of it. I think that's a really good way to combat, you know, choosing lesser known rep.
Yeah.
Is to really kind of, like, tear down the walls, going back to Zaffa meaning freedom of, like, yeah, you know, we are a serious ensemble. We take our craft very seriously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a passion, and so we want to talk about it, and we, you know, don't want to be like uppity and weird. So like, let's,
I feel like we should put that on our business card, like Zaffa Collective, not uppity and weird.
Yeah.
Next time we order them.
You're welcome.
Really rolls off the tongue.
We also, for these, we don't do printed programs. We announce and just like talk about the pieces that we're going to play.
Cool.
From wherever in the space we happen to be set up. And then usually on our website or on our Facebook, the full program details will be given. So if somebody wants to look up a piece and find a recording of it, the information is there, but we don't want folks to feel like they have to, you know, open something and read all of the program notes to know what's going on.
That's really smart because it, I feel like sometimes printed programs can be kind of a distraction during the performance. Mm-hmm. I know that, like, every recital I've been to, it's been, like, I'm always, like, cross-referencing, like, what they're doing and, like, following the movements along with my finger and, like, it segments everything as opposed to just being there and experiencing it. So I think that's another aspect of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like also it's, like, I don't know, for me anyway, not having a program and having people who are, like, the performers, or if we have one of the composers there at our concerts, if we have them talking about it, then it kind of, like, puts the people back in the music. It's, like, a little less sterile.
Yeah.
We will have one of the composers there tonight.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if you could tell us a little bit about the music tonight. Kind of what's the vibe?
Kind of a sad vibe.
It is kind of a sad vibe, a little bit. It's heavy-hearted.
It is heavy-hearted. Yeah, that's I like that.
I feel like that. I feel like the population as a whole is there for that right now.
Yeah.
So we're gonna give the premiere of a piece called "Remember to Breathe," by a composer who is currently doing a PhD in ethnomusicology at Michigan. He's on the train right now on his way to our concert. He's going to talk about that, and we're really excited to have him here. He's mixed race and is Sikh and is exploring that side of his identity through his music right now. So we're getting a lot of those influences, and that's a quartet for violin, viola, cello, and bass, which is giving us a really cool sonic palette to play with.
Yeah, like, it's a cool texture.
Lots of funky harmonics happening.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Very cool.
How often do you guys work with premieres? Like, how often are you, you know, do you try to, are you consciously, like, having a program of premieres or, like, mixing it up, or is it just kind of, like, you know, working with what you have?
I feel like it's a combination of working with what we have and, like, just trying to mix it up. Although, I think on our sort of inaugural concert series that we had in December, we had, like, didn't we have, like, three premieres?
We had...
Or was it two?
I think it was technically three, so we commissioned two pieces for those concerts, and then we played a third piece that a few of the musicians and I had recorded when it was written several years ago, but it hadn't actually been performed. So we technically premiered that one as well, although we didn't commission it.
We were airing it out.
Yeah. And then we have this one. So it's something that we're trying to do a lot of, but commissioning is really expensive.
Absolutely.
Of course.
Yeah.
So we applied for a grant from New Music USA, which is another one of those things that you kind of just have to do like five or six times before it falls in your lap.
Yeah.
But we are definitely trying to do that more often.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So that is tonight's concert, is, Remember to Breathe, and, snacks and chats in Wicker Park.
And our featured marimba player, Josh Graham. We're really excited about Josh. He's an amazing musician, and Marimba One, which is a really big percussion company, recently sponsored him. And so we wanted to give him a shout out and feature him on this because that's just like really exciting.
Does that mean he gets like a little trademark by his name if he's sponsored? I think
he's
I think
like
should
on
get
their
that.
Website. Yeah.
So just like as a player.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
So wait, it's like the same thing of how like. I don't know, if a athlete gets, like, a Nike sponsorship?
I think so. Maybe not on the same scale.
The like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think
he gets millions of dollars.
Like,
I don't think they're like, here's $1 million, do what you want.
Like, in the lobby of his apartment, there are just, like, boxes and boxes of
marimbas. I think they do that sometimes. A friend of mine, Peter Ferry, who's a local percussionist, is also sponsored.
I know that name.
And they
yeah.
sent him stuff to try out.
Oh, cool.
Every now and then, so.
Cool. And they're both sponsored by Marimba One?
Yeah.
Very cool. Because I was going to ask, because I'd imagine Nike has, like, hundreds of people that they sponsor, but I felt like Marimba One probably has, like, one or two. But then that is kind of a even cooler thing, because you're, like, the... I mean, I don't know. I'm, like, talking out of my ass, and I might have just completely insulted Marimba One. Sorry, Marimba One, if you're listening.
I remember how many sponsees they truly have.
Yeah.
Marimba One is totally listening right now.
Yeah,
they're like, what
they
are
could
you guys
have sponsored us,
about?
Daniel.
Yeah.
You ruined it.
Now they're like,
yeah,
no.
That was it.
No sponsorship for you.
The podcast that has that's never had a marimba player on. That's what blew our shot out. Yeah.
It would have been a preemptive scholarship or yeah, sponsorship. Right.
What, are you going to pick up marimba? Is that what you're saying? Anyway, all right, sorry. I'm curious about the a little more about the foundation of Zaffa. So how long have you guys lived in Chicago?
I moved here about 2 years ago.
Cool.
For grad school.
Yeah. Because so you said that there was a group of people that recorded music together a few years ago?
Yes.
Cool.
So the composer of this piece, Theo Chandler, he's currently in New York. He and I did undergrad together at Oberlin in Ohio. And he wrote this piece right before we graduated. And mm-hmm. so our bass player also went to Oberlin, was in the same class as us. And he and I recorded it alongside a violist who traveled for our December shows, Nellie Freed, who's out in San Francisco right now. And I don't think anybody else from that show had recorded it, but the three of us were on that initial recording project and got in touch with Theo about getting the score and seeing if he was interested, and he made cool. some revisions to us and sent us the new version. So a few of us knew each other from undergrad, and the rest of the folks we met when we got here.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was pretty much it.
Cool.
Yeah. Did you want to ask about the next event?
Yeah, let's talk about the next one. So tell us all about that. Like, when, where, like the music?
Yeah. So it's April 23rd, 8:30 p.m. at Constellation. Their frequency series is mm-hmm. having us. We're playing like one of the best pieces ever written. I'm so excited. I can't play it.
I can't play it yet either.
But it's going to be great. It's going to be so good.
But like, we will be able to play it. Like, it'll be fine. Like, nobody worries.
We are extremely lucky. Another person who kind of just fell in our laps. I played the Prokofiev Quintet this fall with a doctoral candidate at, well, I guess he's technically not a candidate yet. He's finishing his
course. But he will be. Like,
but he will be very soon. Andy Hudson, who's kind of a local mainstay in the clarinet scene. And he just told me, if you ever want a clarinetist, hit me up. And I think he's played every concert that we've done since then.
Yeah. He's so excited about
he
clarinet.
Loves learning music
and everything.
And performing it. And it's awesome.
Cool.
And so he is going to play four clarinets on one piece for Oswaldo Golyov's The Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind, which is for a string quartet and klezmer clarinets.
Cool.
And it's such a cool piece. And
it's really great.
A lot of it he is improvising. The program note for it basically is that Golyov expects you, if you're going to play this piece, that you have extensively familiarized yourself with klezmer idioms.
Mm-hmm.
And so just kind of like sends the clarinet off to do their thing at various points in the music.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's really
very
amazing.
Cool.
I'm glad that truck had a lot to say.
Yeah.
I know.
It did have a lot of
energy. And so actually, can you repeat that? Because I think it actually overshadowed.
No.
Yeah. So it was that the person needs to be experienced with klezmer idioms, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Because there are various points in the score where they're just told to use a certain technique or make a certain kind
Got
of sound,
it.
And they just have to know what to do.
Right. You have to, like, commit, definitely.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Andy's committing.
Andy's so committed.
He's committed.
Andy
came committed
to our
to Sparkle
first
Mission.
Concert in November, and we did another Golyov piece, you and Josh.
Yeah.
Did
yeah, we did. It's called Mariel.
Another
heavy hearted
piece. It is
another
heavy hearted piece. I guess we really like very angsty music.
Yeah, like Bobby Toss, apparently.
But Andy came up to me after that show and was like, so you like Golyov? Yeah.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Golyov as much as the next person does. And he was like, all right, we're going to play this. You just need to find a venue and we're mm-hmm. going to do it.
Yeah.
So we got in touch with Peter Margusek over at Constellation, and
cool.
we're going to do that alongside Audrey's quartet.
Yeah, I have a quartet that I just started playing with just a couple of months ago, and we're trying to do some like more new music than not,
mm-hmm.
And we are, it's sort of three out of the four of us are playing on the Golyov, and then all four of us are playing, we're called the Houndstooth Quartet, by the way, I forgot to mention that.
That's
and then
an excellent quartet name.
Thank you. You know what? I actually thought of it, and
hey,
I'm so proud.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought I'd just pat myself on the back there for a second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, and we're also playing just one movement of a really cool piece by Yevgeny Charlotte is his name. I think he's down at UT Austin, and unfortunately he won't be at the performance, but it's going to be really awesome, and it's like very rhythmic and just like really takes you on sort of this train ride of sorts. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And then for that also, Zafa is going to do a pretty short set. Josh, our marimba player, is going to do a solo by Christy Custer, who's one of the composers that we're playing tonight.
Cool.
Audrey's playing the solo cello.
Yeah, it's
in her sixth
tech. Yeah, it's like solo cello and five other people. Is it? Wait, yeah. Did you say sextet? Yeah. I don't know why I like forget how many people are in every group that I ever play with.
And we're also going to do, I think it's a quartet or a quintet, I could be wrong, we're going to do a premiere arrangement by Anna Maidors.
Cool. Yeah,
that's just like super groovy and fun.
Yeah.
So when you're working, in terms of finding this rep, do you like put the call out in like among your peers, or do you like, how do you come across this rep?
A lot of times we just email folks who are playing on the concert and say, what do you want to play? Like, what do you got? Let's put a program together.
There are a lot of people who I feel like are sort of sitting on ideas for things that they, like, sort of, like, dream projects that they want to do. And so I feel like it's not actually that hard to, you know, like, get it out of people. Like, what do you want to play? Like,
and like a lot everybody of, pretty much has like one or two.
Yeah.
Like, and I've always wanted to do this.
Yeah. And a lot of times like people have friends who they know who have like written pieces for them or who have just rewritten pieces in general. And they're like, oh man, like I would really like to do my friend's piece. And so, yeah, it's a combination of like asking performers and also just like are already having friends who write pieces and yeah.
So how many members of Zafa Collective are there?
We're really flexible about that. So we kind of have a core group that's in Chicago that has done pretty much every concert. So that would be Audrey and myself and my co-founder Casey and Josh and Andy. And beyond that, and our viola player Danielle, who was not playing with us November and December, but has been since then, and she's awesome and we love her. Apart from that, one of the reasons that we like to keep it flexible is so that we can program whatever we want and not have to worry about, like, oh, we don't have a tuba player on our normal roster.
Right.
Because just kind of having a pretty wide network of folks who have expressed interest in being involved, that we've performed with and enjoyed working with in the past.
We just pull them into our circle.
Yeah. Get everybody in.
That's great. Well, and I like the idea of, like, there not being two people deciding the program and trying to fit together. Then, like, okay, well, let's do this because, you know, we have two violists, so let's do that. I like the idea of actually talking to your players about what they want to play and what they want to get out of this experience. I think that it's I think that that's smart in terms of sustaining people interested.
Yeah, you want people to, like, feel invested in the group and have a stake in it.
Have some ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's kind of because we've talked, because there's a lot of groups that are working under this collective idea. And it's very intriguing to me, and I think it's really beneficial for a lot of reasons. But I also think it's interesting to watch people figure out how to take all of these like really valid, really valuable, really interesting perspectives and condense it into one performance or like one like program or something like that. Yeah. And I think that to me is where it really makes sense. And and that's really cool.
Have you guys run into any challenges with being more open about like contributions? Like, does, you know, is there someone who has the final say of like what is used and what isn't, or is it like a group decision of what those programs look like?
I don't know. Like, I feel like
I'm kind of like the main administrator. Yeah. Whereas like I send people a lot of emails telling them like we're gonna rehearse here at this time.
Yeah.
Please be there. But apart from that, I think it's a pretty communal decision as far as like, do we like this piece? Do we want to play it? Cool.
And I don't feel like anyone's ever been like super aggressive about being like, we have to play this piece on this concert. So it's like, I feel like I've never had a feeling like I suggested something and it was shot down or anything like that, you know? So I feel like it's a pretty like chill,
nice,
like, yeah, accepting kind of environment to be in.
Yeah. And so, is it more like, and I'm maybe, you guys said this already and I missed it, but is it more like 10 people roughly or more like 20 or 30?
We're more like 6 people who, cool, are like here always.
Got it.
And then as far as like people that we bring in, so the shows that we did in December, Theo's piece, which was the one that we had recorded several years ago, was for string orchestra. So we pulled in, I think our total was 14 players, oh, for, sorry, that. And then we did one other larger ensemble piece that was one of our commissions by Erin Cameron, who's finishing her master's at Bowling Green right now and traveled for that and played on another piece and, like, is all around just a wonderful human
being. She's fierce.
Yeah. She is fierce.
She's tiny and fierce.
She's, like, the size of her bass clarinet. Cool. But it does not matter. And she is really good at the bass clarinet.
Nice. Oh, my God.
And I think we had, like, 14 or 15 on that piece as, cool, well, and there were more winds and brass involved. So I think total we have played with probably about 20 people.
Yeah.
But as far as the folks who show up on a regular basis, the number is smaller.
Yeah, and that makes it, I'm sure that makes it easier. It's doing the 14 or 15, not, isn't necessarily a stretch, but it's like a, not even necessarily a special occasion either, but I guess you get what I'm saying. We're like, because the examples I'm thinking of now of collectives is you have usually like 20 or 30 people, and so that, it seems to me like that would be a thing where it's like, okay, we're coming from so many different directions and
so many different perspectives, right, and it's just a lot of opinions in one room,
mm-hmm,
which, yeah, is sometimes challenging, but
well, even in the sense of collectivism as a concept, like keeping it smaller but also inclusive, but also the idea that there are multiple collectives and there are multiple, like, that it can be separate, not separate, but like you know, yeah, like a smaller collective that you are able to better define what you want to do easily in a way that it doesn't feel like you're even doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I really am curious about the frequency series at Constellation, because I know for me, I've only heard about it a couple times, and I'm always like, oh, I want to go to it, but I actually have no idea what, because the logistics of it, is it weekly or is it monthly?
So that's their, like, Sunday night series.
Okay.
And so, yeah, in theory, it's weekly. They don't always book every Sunday of the month.
Yeah.
But I think, at least through the spring, they're booked pretty solid.
Cool.
Yeah, because we had originally been talking to them about doing this show in May.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of was, like, our dream, like, how this would work out, because we already had this show.
We had a vision.
Tonight's show for April, and we were trying to give ourselves a little bit more time in between concerts, so we weren't, like, oversaturating the people who come to our shows. And they were totally booked in May, but, cool, wanted to put us on, so we said we would show up,
yeah,
in April.
We're like, I guess we'll take that offer.
That was pretty much up to Andy.
All right.
Can you acquire 4 clarinets?
Yeah, exactly. Can you wrangle the clarinets?
Cool. No, yeah, and I think it's a really cool thing because it seems like it's really stabilized the backbone for the new music scene in Chicago.
Yeah.
That group. I think that events like that, frequent events like that, are really necessary for any group of people to be consistently doing a thing or, like, to have a scene,
mm-hmm,
for, yeah, something.
There's, like, a hang.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
We, yeah, need a hang.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you guys have is your presence only in Chicago, or do you do concerts in other places?
We're working on branching out a little bit. So our violist that I had mentioned earlier, who's out in San Francisco, is trying to get some Salon Series concerts happening out there. She was doing an orchestra academy that was, like, loosely affiliated with the San Francisco Symphony. And I think it's done with that and is just staying in the area to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so she flew out for our inaugural concert weekend in December and really loved it and wanted to keep it going in San Francisco. So we've been talking to her about doing some shows there. We have our, like, errant webmaster.
Yeah.
Lives in New York. I love Michal very dearly. He hasn't updated our website in 3 months.
Yeah, I noticed that.
He's a composer and a very dear friend, and he lives in New York with his partner, who's a violinist, who has also played with us. And we would love to get some stuff going in the New York scene with them as well. My mm-hmm. sister lives in New York, so I'm always looking for an excuse to go visit.
Mm-hmm. Same. My family's from New York, too. That's in the same way.
Yeah.
Cool. We definitely still have a good amount of time. Do you have more? I know I have more questions. This always happens. Once the settled in a moment of like, I don't have a question right this second comes in, and it's like, oh, I'm not going to have a question for like 10 more seconds at least.
You can start counting.
So yeah, just, no like, problem.
Put the pressure. One, on. Two, three, four.
We need the Dr. Beat to like.
We do. What?
Well, so what got. What was your first step outside of the like standard rep, if you want to put it like that?
Oh my gosh. I was just talking about this actually. So I'm doing a workshop at Northwestern right now with Claire Chase of ICE. And she just kind of asked all of us who were there last week to say, like, how did you get your start doing new music? And so I had to think about that for a while and recalled being a freshman at Oberlin and, like, not really knowing how to hold a violin or make a nice sound. But I had a lot more time on my hands than people who were, like, playing concerts regularly. And so I got conned into playing, like, 5 compositions.
That's how they get you.
They get you.
They get
you. They're like, you don't know any better. Come play my recital.
They're like, well, okay.
And it was, like, some of it was really weird and some of those people I didn't want to work with anymore. And some of it was really fun and really great. Mm-hmm. And so I just continued dabbling in that vein for a while through undergrad and then moved to Chicago and started doing it a lot more intensely. Knowing how to play my instrument helped a little bit.
Yeah. Isn't that, you know, it's always helpful when you know what you're doing.
Yeah. At least somewhat.
You've, like, learned the geography. Totally like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me. I have a question, but I'm going to lead with an anecdote.
Okay.
When I was in undergrad, I had a woman that had written a spiritual that wanted me to sing it. And it was like, she was like, I want you to sing this. And so I sang it one time and I did it because I was like, I'm not going to do something that is not my... Basically, she wanted me to do it blacker. And I was like, I can't. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's not... So anyway, so like what?
That's not me.
You're like, I can try, but like.
Like what? I'm not gonna go there. Like,
right.
I'm gonna like get killed or something. Anyway.
Or just like catch shit for it.
Yeah,
it's not you.
And you don't want to run the risk of like accidentally coming across as like a caricature.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, because it's not like I didn't know how to do it well or because she was like, I had a person do this for me and they did it much better. Not that she didn't say it like this, but she did it. She was like, they just did it more, you know, like energized and like, and I was like, oh, come on. Like, I've not, like a gospel choir. Like, you've seen the gospel choirs on TV, right? And it's like, anyway, so here's my actual question.
Okay.
When you...
That was such a setup for whatever question is coming up.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I'm on the edge of my seat.
How do you best deal with getting a piece, and I think this is probably more of a thing that you, of that time when you were in undergrad, and you were getting a few different things. When you got a piece that you were like, this is just not going to work, but like I already told the composer I was going to perform it, like... Mm-hmm. How, what is, you know...
Ask for scores before you commit.
Yeah, that's
good advice.
That's what you gotta do.
Yeah.
That's really smart.
Good. Yeah.
No, asking for submissions is always good because then you can always just say that you didn't choose it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, this just didn't fit with our programming.
Yeah. I think most things, like, I'll play once or twice and mm-hmm. then, you know, it's not... happening,
yeah.
Then it's not happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I can, that idea of getting roped into composition recitals is something that deeply resonates with me. In my undergrad, I was friends with a lot of composers, and so I got to perform on a bunch of their senior recitals, mm-hmm. and for some reason, I got to be really good friends with all the experimental composers, mm-hmm. so a lot of the stuff I did, My shining moment was I got to perform a piece that was based off of our friend Bijan. Bijan did not write it. It was our friend Joseph that wrote it. And there was a section where I was heavily featured where we were all speaking his name in rhythm on stage.
Like Bijan.
Yeah, and I just remember, well, one part that I very clearly sticks out of my head is Bijan Oh has a well-rounded family. Bijan Oh has a well-rounded family. with stomping and clapping and like slapping of knees.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Audrey will perform.
I'm into it. I'm ready. Yeah.
I might still have to score. Just see, and it has a color inverted picture of Bijan's face.
Oh my god. That's
so
amazing.
So yes, weird.
How
college
did Bijan feel about this? That's what I want to know.
See, okay, so the deal with Bijan is that he has a very strong personality that is very easy to poke fun at. He's super sweet and like
but he's a singular person.
He is a singular person, and like, I mean, no one's making fun of him now because he's killing it, right? Like, he is, like, he writes music for Bravo, the TV channel.
He's rolling it.
Doing bueno.
Yeah, but, so he was kind of unfazed by it because it was kind of like par for the course. Okay. And like, a lot of people came to that recital because they knew there was going to be a piece about Bijan on it.
I have another question. So as you've gotten more and more submissions, is there are there giveaways where you look at something and you go like, this is gonna be great, or like, this is not gonna be great, like
that's a tricky question.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like, can you, how, like,
for operas and for vocal pieces, it's easy to tell based on, like, the poetry.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Like, if somebody chooses, like, you know, a song cycle of reimagined Barney songs,
right,
you know it's probably not going to be...
You're like, I don't know about the setting.
Yeah.
Or even the range. Like, if it sits, like, really out of the vocal range, like, oh... Like, maybe you're a great composer, but, like, you don't know how to write for voice.
But, like, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. Right.
I think, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, I think it would be harder to assess that just from face value with an instrumental piece.
Yeah, I mean, you and Casey have seen, a few more scores than I have, like, in terms of deciding program, but, I mean... I certainly haven't, like, on our concerts or anything, I certainly haven't had anything in front of me where I was like, this is dumb. Like, I mean, So, like, all of the composers we've had, like, can rest easy. Like, there was nothing where I was like, this is, like, what are you doing here? This is a bad idea. Like, it's just, you know, you can, sorry, go ahead. I was a lot of times you can tell, like you said, like, that somebody has good compositional ideas, but it's like they don't know how to execute them necessarily in a way that's, like, appropriate for a certain instrument or a certain voice. So.
Yeah.
And the flip side, the piece that we're premiering tonight, Connor came to a concert that a few of us played at in January in Evanston. They're a conducting student put on a big Mahler program. And he came for that. And Casey, our bass player, had premiered one of his pieces last year. And so it was just kind of chatting backstage and was like, hey, you know, if you ever have a score, like, send it our way. I liked your stuff before. Kind of thinking like, oh, you know, maybe in like 6 months or something. And Connor emailed us like 3 weeks later and was like, here's a completed score. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to program it, but, you know, it's here.
But, like,
and
it's here if you want to. I'm just waiting for you.
So Casey sent it around and everybody was like, this looks really good. We have to play
and
this.
And it sounds cool. Really, really good. It's a great piece. So.
Sometimes you can look at something and be like, this is going to be really cool.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And I'm sure what I've realized too as I was asking the question is, like, you guys have it set up pretty well that one of you at least has heard the piece once most of the time. Unless, I guess, with premieres it's different.
Yeah. Or, like, has faith in the composer.
Yeah, like, we've had past experiences with people, and so that's sort of, sometimes that serves as our, like, screening process. Mm-hmm. Like, not that there's a screening process, that sounds terrible.
I think the only thing that we went in blind on was the trio that you did in January.
That's right. That's right.
That one we were
totally blind. That was, like, blind. Okay. That was a great piece, also very thorny, if we're being real. Like, thorny sounding, and it was, like, very hard.
The woman who wrote it, her claim to fame, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you would know better than I, was writing scores to horror movies.
Yes, that's true.
And you can kind of tell.
I feel like maybe she even had a nickname or something. Elizabeth Lutyens is the name of the composer.
I remember Daniel announcing a nickname, but then calling her piece horrific, and so it devolved.
I think she was called the Queen of Horror or something, and. Which, I mean, there were definitely some parts in that piece where I was like, yeah, I get it. I get it, Elizabeth. it was a great piece. But yeah, that was one where we were kind of not sure about it. And then we sat down and did it and we're like, okay, I think this will be fine.
Mm-hmm. That was one that we were backstage at another concert and our pianist showed up with Daniel's a just stack like, of scores and was like, music. All right, guys, let's pick one.
I'm like, okay. Oh
my God. Do you prefer to have the composer there or to have the composer not there?
Love having them there.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessary. I'm not that we have like oodles and oodles of rehearsals because it's not necessary. Like we practice our part and then we come together.
Right.
I don't particularly enjoy it all the time if a composer is super involved from day one, because I do think this is how I feel. I know, I understand the sentiment when you're like, why is that performer doing that? That's not written in the music. What are they, why? But also you have to at least demonstrate some amount of trust in the players who are taking the time to play your piece. And
it's kind of like your turn is over.
A little bit, yeah. And it's not if there's something I'm doing, that's totally wrong, I want to know, of course. Yeah. I want to, at least, do my best to, match their vision of the piece.
Yeah. But
at the same time, it's coming back to what I said earlier, I don't super want them, incredibly involved from day one. But I want them involved, absolutely.
Absolutely,
it's their baby, so.
Yeah, and I don't know that there are that many composers that want the performance to be the exact same every time it's performed.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah. Sometimes they want it to be a product of, the vibe and the people.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Something that we've done a fair amount since we are relatively new and don't have the funding to shell up for, $10,000 commissions and whatever, is when composers give us pieces, we offer them workshopping time, especially if it's a new piece. That's pretty valuable for them to hear something that's, not a MIDI file.
Right.
And, work on, if there are adjustments to be made that has to do with the piece. And so that's kind of cool to be a part of. And, they're giving us pieces. We definitely want to be able to give something back to them, even if that's not a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think having somebody looking over your shoulder your C sharp isn't high enough.
Yeah. Get out of here.
We're going. It is really nice to have the composers at the performances though.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think everyone that we've had come to a show has been really comfortable speaking to the folks who are there to listen, which is really great when you have not me paraphrasing.
Right. You paraphrase very well, though.
I try. I think Andy and Josh are a little bit more charismatic than I am.
They're very suave.
They are very suave. Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Well, we have a few minutes left. So, the last thing we do on every show with our guests is a nice one-minute plug. Sometimes those are very obvious, I think, in our case, especially with the show tonight. But there's also room for, if you have a great TV show that you like or a book that you're reading or anything like that.
Or just someone who's generally kicking ass who deserves some love.
Oh, man. I feel very on the spot now.
No, you're fine.
Okay. Just talk about your concert.
I'll start Okay. So we did a benefit concert in January for the Chicago Women's Health Center. They're in Uptown, and they're a super, super, super amazing organization. I have a lot of love for them. And their education director, Scout Bratt, came to our show and talked a lot about what they do in the Chicago community. They're super local. And the reason that we wanted to do the benefit concert for them in January was because they didn't see the massive spike in donations post-election that organizations like Planned Parenthood and the
ACLU
received, because they are only operating in Chicago. And so we wanted to show them a little love.
Yeah.
And they do a lot in the community. They provide pay-as-you-can health care and mental health services to folks in the area and to trans folks. And they do a lot of education in schools about what it means to have a body and to have a relationship with your body, and stuff like that is I think, undervalued and extremely important.
I feel like so, just that, like, those notions are, like, kind of under siege.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what is that organization called again?
The Chicago Women's Health Center.
Chicago mm-hmm. Women's Health Center. Yeah. Awesome. That's great.
Yeah. So we did a concert for them on the day after the inauguration, and we're looking
at... It was the day of the Women's March, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the day
it?
Of the Women's yeah. March. So a lot of us, like, went to the march, and then... Like, I went to the march and then went straight to the quartet rehearsal. and we're looking at partnering with them again in the future.
Nice.
Cool. Very cool. So the show's tonight?
Yes.
Yes.
7:30 Great. Yeah. At the Heaven Art Gallery?
Yeah.
Heaven Gallery. Yes.
Heaven Gallery. Great.
It's a little weird to get to. You walk down Milwaukee and it's like on the second floor of a building and the sign is not easy to see. So if you find yourself looking in the windows of a giant furniture store, you've gone one door too far. You go back and then you need to walk up a very steep flight of stairs.
Cool. And are there tickets?
No, so we do donate, for the Salon Series, we do donate as able, and our suggested amount is $10, but, you know, if you're a broke grad student, you can only give us $3, that's totally chill. If you're making scads of money and you would like to give us more, we also... Yeah.
Throw all your money at us. Appreciate that.
Limit $10.
we also do it BYOB and snacks, and we provide a little reception as well. But,
cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then Frequency Series at Constellation, which is, what neighborhood is that in?
That is...
It's Logan Square, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, it's on Western. Yeah. It's like Western and Belmont-ish.
Cool.
And that is ticketed, and tickets are $10, and you can get them online or at the door.
Cool.
And there's a cash bar on premises there.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with us, you are more than welcome to. Head over to scopymag.com to see articles. You can also see our list of episodes there of our podcast. You can find us on social media on Facebook at Scopy Magazine. You can also find us on Instagram at Twitter and Twitter at Scopy Mag. Yeah.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a zero budget, but we would not like that to always be the case. We are trying really hard to launch a performance series this summer. We're working on securing a location. If any of you have leads on a location that would be down for frequent performances mm-hmm. from skilled and enthusiastic performers of all genres, please let us know.
Mm-hmm.
If you head to our website, Scopy Mag, you can look literally anywhere on our website and you will find a million donation buttons. I've made it shockingly easy for you to donate to our podcast. There are donation levels for as low as $5 a month up to the crazy ambitious $100 a month.
Go big or go home.
Go, man. Mm-hmm. Put up or shut up. So,
you can also do a one-time donation.
Yeah.
But I'm going to steal this part because it's for your birthday. Maureen's birthday is on April 10th.
Which is Monday.
Mm-hmm. So I already got her present. I'm wearing them right now because one cable's longer than the other. So I got Maureen some new headphones. But we're also doing a special promotion-y thing until April 10th where anybody that signs up for a subscription, we will match the first month's donation to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And so we'll be doing that.
So if you donate $5, we will donate $5 to Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so please do that.
We'll probably just generally do a donation. Like, yeah. Even if we don't get any new subscribers, we're going to make a donation.
Right.
We're not monsters.
Yes. I'm not like holding it over your head or anything. But
yeah. So give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Mm-hmm. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep. Yeah.